Hey there, comrade. Are you looking to party build with the Bolsheviks? Well, tonight's your lucky night. Recently, I stumbled across this document from the Russian Communist Party Bolsheviks 10th Party Congress, which was a very significant congress held in 1921 as the imperialist-backed Civil War was coming to a close. This document, I think, is very interesting to me for a number of reasons. Two in particular. Number one, it gives us a really good example, I think, of how to be both dialectical and fundamentally materialist when we're trying to come up with concrete solutions for varying situations. Maoism requires that we constantly assess the contradictions and conditions and sum up our work so that we can apply the universal to the constantly changing particular situations. And while this is no easy task, you know, this document, I think, helps us think through what that even means as Maoists. And number two, the second reason I think, or I really appreciate this document, is because it is an excellent resource that helps explain why Gonzalo Thott's idea to generally militarize the party is wrong. Not only was militarization of the party not proven correct through the Peruvian People's War, it was never practiced by the Russian Communist Party or the Communist Party of China, right? The two successful parties that actually led and won their revolutions. And thus should not be considered correct yet for Peru and should definitely not be thought of as a contribution to Maoism. The form of organization and the methods of work should be determined by an assessment of particular conditions. We apply the general ideology of Marxism-Leninism, Maoism to particular conditions and periods, right, and situations that we are like situated in. Today, the United States principally needs a Maoist vanguard party, but a common assertion from Gonzaloists is that the vanguard party is essentially a militarized party. Again, this idea has not been proven correct. Being militant and militarized are two very different things, as this document, I think, from the Bolsheviks will make very clear. And if you've studied the texts from the Bolsheviks and from Lenin and Stalin in particular, you know, they're constantly talking about a militant party. And but if you read the arguments of the Gonzaloists of the Communist Party of Brazil, Red Fraction, in their magazine El Maoista, on the militarization of the party, you will find metaphysical explanations of this wrong idea that project original kernels of this perceived truth that has now been completed by Gonzalo in the words, in the past words and writings of Marx, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao. So it's very telling, I think, in the CPBRF's document, Lenin and the Militarized Communist Party, if you want to check that one out. But instead of a universally militarized party, this document by the Bolsheviks spells out, from the perspective of their experience, the necessity of the vanguard party taking on different forms of organization and methods of work and prioritizing different tasks in different situations and periods of struggle. So there are 5 sections and 25 propositions that have been translated into English. And so I'll read the proposition, then make a brief comment. Wait, no, actually, I'm going to change that up. I'm going to read the whole section and then I'll comment on all of the ideas within the section. I think that'll run a bit more smoothly. Cool. All right. So the 5 sections are: number 1, general propositions. Number 2, the war period in our party. Number 3, the contradictions of the war period in our party. Number 4, the new period, its tasks and party construction. And number 5, general measures for the restoration of the party. All right, so let's begin. This is general propositions. Quote, the party of revolutionary Marxism fundamentally rejects the search for an absolutely correct form of party organization, suitable for all stages of the revolutionary process, and also for the methods of its work. On the contrary, the form of organization and the methods of work are entirely determined by the peculiarities of a given concrete historical situation and the tasks which flow directly from this situation. Number two, from this point of view, it is clear that any organizational form and corresponding working methods can change. From forms of development of the party organization to fetters of this development as the objective conditions of the development of the revolution change. And conversely, an organizational form which has become unsuitable can change and become the necessary and only expedient one when the corresponding objective conditions are revived. Number three, the contradictions between the needs of the new emerging situation, on the one hand, and the established form of the organization and the methods of its work, on the other, generally emerge before the need for a change of course is finally felt. This latter must change only when, in general, in the main and basic way, the task that promoted the previous type of organization and the method of work corresponding to it has been fulfilled. Number four, the forms and methods of work of the party organization practiced at this or that historical moment cannot be mechanically transferred to other organizations, such as the Soviets or organs of an administrative or economic character. Such a transposition would rest on a total oblivion of the difference between the organization of the vanguard of the working class, right, the party, and other organizations. Differences between classes, between different groups within the workers, between the different tasks that these organizations set for themselves, etc. End quote. Okay, so that's the first section on general propositions. A few things that that kind of stick out and jump out to me is that the first basic thing is that the form of party organization in its methods of work, they must be determined by the given stage of a revolutionary process, right? The concrete historical situation. And that historical situation then can determine also the specific tasks of the party. So it's the situation that determines the tasks, you know, what's primary or secondary in a given situation. The tasks, the methods of work, and the form of party organization in a given situation. So, yeah, the organizational form and methods of work can change. I also thought in the third proposition, the idea that the contradiction emerges before consciousness of, you know, awareness of the need to resolve that contradiction. This is a materialist analysis, but even in terms of the issues and the problems within the party, usually we'll have contradictions between the new emerging situation and the old organization and methods of work that was correct for its former, for the older situation. That contradiction might even emerge before we really become aware of it. And then finally, the forms and methods of work of the party can't be mechanically imposed. Upon all mass organizations and non-party organizations of the various classes. And I think that's a really good critique against any kind of dogmatic idea that says, well, this is how all of the communist organizations, regardless of whether they're in the United Front or a part of the armed struggle, or even like non-party organizations, like every organization needs to follow this exact form of organization. That would be extremely dogmatic. And I think this this resolution number four, this proposition number four, gets at that dogmatism. All right, excellent. Let's head back to the text. The war period in our party. Quote, the preceding period of the development of the revolution was characterized by the armed attack of the world imperialism on the Soviet Republic by a fierce struggle on the fronts, above all on the external ones, when the very existence of the Republic was threatened and when the latter by repelling the attacks of the enemies, had to secure for itself the main sources of life of an economic character: coal, oil, the grain-growing areas, etc. Number 6. Therefore, the immediate basic strike task was the task of military action. Before this task, all the others, including the educational task of the party, had to recede. The whole republic became an armed camp, and the party of the proletariat had to adapt itself to this basic task in order to be able to solve it. Number 7. The organizational form of the party, therefore, inevitably had to be, in this period, the militarization of the party organization. Just as the form of the proletarian dictatorship acquired the character of a military proletarian dictatorship, so the form of the party organization assumed, and must, from the point of view of revolutionary expediency, have assumed under such conditions, a corresponding character. This was expressed, on the whole, in extreme organizational centralism and in the curtailment of the collective organs of the party organization. Number 8. In the same way, the methods of party work stemmed from the necessity of hostilities and corresponded to organizational forms. They, by and large, gravitated towards the system of combat orders, which were given by the leading party institutions and which were unquestioningly carried out without discussion by ordinary party members. The typical work was continuous mobilizations, primarily to the military front, and the redistribution of party forces from this basic angle. Number 9. Only through this structure was it possible for the party to overcome the resistance of its opponents to emerge victorious from the struggle. This structure was the most expedient for the war period. End quote. Okay, so a few things here. The work of the party was determined, right, by the principal contradiction between the invading imperialists and the Soviet Republic, the new Soviet Republic. And so the task, the primary task was what? To defend the Republic and secure for itself coal, oil, and grain, else their seizure of the state would be crushed. And so the primary task was, particularly in this situation, a military action. Right? The Republic, the text says, became an armed camp. All other tasks, you know, even internal education within the party, were paused. That's how acute this contradiction was in that situation. So the organizational form of the party in this period, the war period, and under these circumstances necessitated the militarization of the party. There was no democracy. The methods of work were synonymous with combat orders. And this structure, again, was necessitated by the given peculiar situation. Okay, excellent. Back to the text. This is section 3, the contradictions of the war period and the party. Number 10, quote, "The principal contradiction of this period was the fact that, with the rapid quantitative growth of the party, the nature of the work interfered with communist education of the whole mass of party members, especially newcomers. At the same time, the involvement, through mobilization, of almost all party members in active work quickly created, even among the most backward strata, their need for self-activity and active solutions to questions of party life, which came into conflict with the extreme centralism and the system of combat orders that entered into the practice of party organizations." Number 11. "The enormous material expenses of the war, and, as a consequence, the impoverishment of the country, went hand in hand with the development of the need to maintain especially the priority sectors and groups of workers, including party workers. The inevitable consequence, to a great extent socially necessary, was thus the growth of material inequality among party members, together with the growth of general poverty. Number 12. The decomposition of the old class groupings, especially the decomposition of the intelligentsia, as well as the decomposition of the opposition socialist parties, right, the Mensheviks and the socialist revolutionaries, the SRs, provided an influx of these elements into the ranks of our party. And having already had the experience of their previous work, with a relative reduction in educational work among the general mass of party members, and an extreme need for active and experienced workers, they could quickly move up the hierarchical Soviet, military, trade union, and party ladder. Number 13. With the same poverty, the needs of the extremely centralized apparatus, formed on the basis of the very backward cultural level of the masses, led to the swelling of the bureaucratic apparatus and created a tendency to isolate it. Number 14. Thus, the war period created, on the one hand, a generally expedient organization, and on the other hand, it generated a number of contradictions. And since all these contradictions grew up on the basis of devastation and lack of organizational forces, centralization developed a tendency to turn it into bureaucratization and separation from the masses. The system of combat orders often took perverted forms of unnecessary pressure. Necessary privileges became the ground for abuses of various kinds. The necessary curtailment of party organs led to a weakening of the spiritual life of the party, etc., which in general led to an internal party crisis. End quote. All right, so that was section 3. A few things here, right? The rapid quantitative growth that happened after the war led, and actually during the war, during the war, led to a contradiction between the need to work really, really quickly and the extreme centralism and the methods of work that resembled pretty much all entirely combat orders. It was all centralism, no democracy. There's also, I think, the interesting point on the material expenses of war, developed the need to maintain privileges and contributed to material inequality and poverty within the party itself. Another really interesting factor here was their mentioning of how the Mensheviks and the SRs literally just like flocked into the Bolshevik party now. And so, and on one hand, they had a lot of experience, and so they were able to climb up all these ladders within the mass organizations and within the party itself. And but then they also brought their ideas as well into the party. So that created other contradictions within the party. One of the main things that this section is naming is just that the extreme centralism was necessary due to the situation, due to the war. But the centralization, the extreme centralization, also brought a tendency towards bureaucracy and alienated people within the party itself, the lower organs, the higher organs, and then the party itself from the masses, both party mass organizations and especially non-party mass organizations. So yeah, I think it's just really interesting. This section is just naming how the war period, its conditions, created these contradictions, and these contradictions had these particular consequences. All right, back to the text. Section number 4, the new period, its tasks, and party construction. Proposition number 15, quote, "The current moment is characterized, on the one hand, by the almost complete elimination of external military fronts, and on the other, by the extreme aggravation of contradictions within the country. The new form of foreign interference, manifested in the organization of plots and revolts, the severe economic crisis and the food crisis connected with it, the sharp aggravation of relations between the working class and the peasantry, strengthened by the crop failure of the last year. the fatigue of the broad proletarian masses, exhausted by an unprecedented struggle against countless enemies, all these phenomena received their most vivid expression in the demobilization period and made the situation of the Soviet Republic extremely difficult again. The proletariat was affected, moreover, in such a way that the connection between the proletarian vanguard, right, the party, and the non-party masses of workers, some of whom, because of the crisis, fell under the influence of the petty bourgeoisie, was weakened and the internal cohesion of the party itself was reduced. Thus, the current epoch itself has a contradictory character, since the transition to a peaceful situation at the same time, under the given historical conditions, leads to new forms of struggle on the internal front. Number 16. Whereas in the past, the party had to orient itself directly to combat tasks at the expense of educational tasks, now the raising of the level of the party members, while involving them in active participation in general party life, becomes the central task of the day, along with strengthening the influence of the party on the non-party masses, drawing closer to them, and bringing the party into combat readiness to fight against the forces of the counter-revolution. The absolute cohesion and unity of the party, not only formally and mechanically, but also ideologically and in militancy, is needed more than ever. This must be achieved on a new basis, that of the standard of party members which has risen in spite of everything, on the basis of the inclusion of all members of the party in its active life, on the basis of the summation of the vast experience of its members who have worked in different fields during the war period. It is necessary to reassemble the party, which during the war period has been broken up into separate units. It is necessary to bring together the top and the bottom, military workers and civilians, professionals and Soviets, old and new party members, young and old. Without this basic task, this gigantic building and economic role of the proletarian vanguard cannot be fulfilled. Number 17. This task cannot be accomplished with the preservation of the old organizational form. The proximate needs of the moment require a new organizational shell. This form is the form of workers' democracy. The course of workers' democracy must be taken with as much determination and as vigorously pursued as the course of the militarization of the party was pursued in the previous period, since it meets no obstacle in the needs of the immediate struggle against the forces of counter-revolution. Number 18. By workers' internal party democracy is meant that organizational form in the conduct of party communist policy, which ensures that all party members, down to the most backward, take an active part in the life of the party, in the discussion of all questions put before it, and also active participation in the construction of the party. The form of workers' democracy excludes all appointment as a system, but finds its expression in the broad electability of all institutions from bottom to top in their accountability, control, etc. Number 19. The methods of work are, first of all, methods of broad discussion of all the most important questions, discussion on them, with full freedom of intra-party criticism, methods of collective elaboration of general party decisions until general party decisions are made on these questions. These methods are now as necessary and as important as the methods of combat orders and their unconditional execution during the aggravation of the Civil War. It goes without saying that once decisions have been made, these decisions are obligatory and must be carried out as quickly and precisely as possible. It goes without saying that the party must have sufficient elasticity to switch quickly to a system of combat orders if necessary. Number 20. Thus, the most general intra-party task is not the quantitative expansion of party ranks, but their qualitative improvement, an increase in consciousness. Communist education, activity, amateurism, and initiative of all party members, and absolute unity on the basis of all party ranks, end quote. Okay, so this fourth section I think is really, really important, and it really gets at the need to develop new forms of work and new methods of work, and we'll have new principal and secondary tasks determined by different situations and conditions and contradictions. So the new contradictions, right, the new situation, the new tasks, you know, it's our job to correctly assess and handle these situations and these tasks, or we'll be wiped out. Another point here is that the combat tasks, according to the text, were no longer primary. Combat orders and the militarization of the party, these were no longer the principal forms of methods of work or form of organization, because they were in a new and different situation. They were no longer in the war period. Educational tasks and the ideological and political development of party members then became the central task, as well as the strengthening of the link between the party and non-party masses. And so there's the shift, right, from the actual militarization during the specific period back to militancy in principle, right? It's not like this abandonment of militancy, but there's clearly a distinction, a differentiation between militancy and militarization. And yeah, this new period is, the form of organization is heavily marked, as they say, by democracy, workers' democracy. So the old form of the militarized party that was necessary in the old period now needs replaced with a new organizational form that is constituted by workers' democracy. And again, it's determined by the particular conditions of the new situation. No more combat orders. We need broad discussion and debate from the lowest organs to the highest organs. Endless criticism at all levels, self-criticism. And then I also liked how this period started to focus on qualitative development and not just quantitative development. Okay, excellent. So this is our fifth and final section. Back to the text. This is general measures for the restoration of the party. Quote, number 21. In the view of the fact that certain elements of the petty bourgeois intelligentsia and semi-intelligentsia, uncultivated in the communist spirit and not yet processed by the party, have entered the party, in view of the fact that an enormous number of communist workers are being almost entirely absorbed by the needs of developing Soviet construction and have to tear themselves away from direct work in factories and plants, and also because of the great losses suffered by the party in the Civil War, it is absolutely necessary to turn the levers of party politics resolutely in the direction of recruiting workers and purging the party of non-communist elements by accounting for each individual member of the RCP according to the work he is doing in the Russian Communist Party. Number 22. If new party members violate party discipline, etc., the communists who recommended them are subject to disciplinary action, up to and including expulsion from the party in the case of repeated, inconsiderate, and frivolous recommendations. As a measure to protect the party from being contaminated by unfit elements, it is necessary to recommend that the names of those who wish to join the party be made public. Recommenders should have 1 year of party experience. Candidate experience for non-working comrades and peasants is increased to 1 year. Number 23. The Congress charges the Central Committee and its Org Bureau with the duty of keeping a close watch on nominating workers and systematically and steadily drawing them into responsible work in the center and in the field. The Congress considers one of the biggest shortcomings in the party's work to be the fact that so far the party has not yet been able to nominate forces available to us to the relevant posts and has not been able to give sufficient scope to their development. Number 24. The Congress affirms the decisions of the All-Russian Party Conference of 1920 and charges The Central Committee and Control Commissions with a decisive struggle against abuses by party members of their positions and material advantages. The Congress fully confirms the course towards equalization in the field of the material status of party members. And last proposition, number 25, the Congress considers as its main task work among the party grassroots, as well as work among non-party members with a view to rapprochement of the party with the broad masses of the proletariat and the peasantry. This requires that all responsible members of the party should periodically serve a corresponding duty. That is, that some of the even busiest party workers should be constantly at work in the very thick of proletarian life in organizational and propaganda work. End quote. All right, so that was our section five. And a few things that kind of stick out to me here is that, so we have these new contradictions within the party that demand recruitment of working class people and expulsion of non-communist elements, right? Because they had been flooded with certain character of classes, the more petite bourgeois tendencies, habits, ideas, right? Practices. And so they wanted to focus on recruiting specifically people who are genuinely working class. Although, if you study the history, they actually came up with, there was some struggle with actually that. Because some people, you know, might have worked in a factory for a year, which is very different from someone who had worked for 15 years. Yeah, and so they needed to expel some of the non-communist elements. And they wanted to increase in this period now a greater sense of accountability, collective accountability, higher candidacy requirements for particular, also for particular people. Especially, I think it named like if you hadn't worked in a factory for a year, then, or maybe it was the peasantry, I think, that they had to go through a candidacy process for an entire year before they were brought in. Then there was an issue of promoting the right people. There's a struggle against the abuses of privileges and positions that had resulted from the previous period, the war period, which necessitated material inequality and privileging of certain sectors and workers within the party. And so now in this new situation, they wanted to pursue equalization in the field of material status of party members. And then finally, they identify that what's their main task? Their main task is to work and to link themselves and to propagandize amongst the masses, and in particular, the working class and the peasantry. They needed a deep and genuine link. So that's that. I'm going to wrap up this episode here. Again, this is I think, really informative for questions around party building. And it's an excellent example of being dialectical and materialist in our understanding of forms of organization, of methods of work, of identifying what's the principal and secondary tasks in light of given situations. So, and then also the other thing was, I think this is a great resource for explaining why you don't generally militarize the party. You militarize the party, perhaps, when you're in a civil war. But even before you have won your protracted people's war, you know, that's... militarization of the party is not a part of the protracted people's war. So not only should we not generally militarize the party in a capitalist imperialist country that does not wage a protracted people's war, but there are no grounds for militarizing the party in a semi-feudal semi-colony. So it's not a universal contradiction. And I mean, doesn't seem like it's a particular contribution to the Peruvian struggle as well. All right. Well, that's all I got. And I will link this document in the show notes. And do me a favor, leave a rating or review. That helps boost the show. Send a link just directly to a comrade or a friend. And if you like the show, if you look back, if you scroll back and you say, you know what, there's some good stuff here, I think this is helpful, you've enjoyed it, or you think other people might benefit from it, consider contributing a buck or two at Patreon. That's really, really, really helpful for me. So, yeah, I think thank you, comrades, and we will talk soon.